Okay, we continue in the Rambam. We're coming to the end of Hilchas Avot, Perek Yudalet, Halacha Yudalet, Chapter 14, Law 14. Hamoylich atzomos mimakom lamakom. If a person now is disinterring bones from one plot to another place, mimakom lamakom, now the question is, in what do you carry them? In a respectful way. Lo yitneim bedis kat bedi sakyo. You don't carry them in a type of a leather sack. And, well, that's okay to put in the sack, but now where you're going to put the sack is the problem. Yanichem al gabe chamoro, and you put it on the donkey, still okay. Yir kavaleim, and now you sit on the bones, on the bag. In other words, you're sitting on top of it. You have the bag in the bones, the bones in the bag, on the saddle, whatever, and now you're sitting on top of the bag of the bones. That you can't do. Because you are treating them in a denigrated fashion. Now, in the laws of Hilchas Sefer Torah, when it talks about carrying a Sefer Torah in a similar fashion, it says like this. It says, if you're not worried about robbers or things like that, you put the Sefer Torah in your lap, right across your heart, and you hold it nicely. And then you ride on the animal. But if you're really concerned that people might steal from you, then you can do other things as well to protect it better. So the same thing with the bones. Really, you should be slinging it over your back, behind you on the donkey, sitting on the donkey behind you, not you sitting on top of it. I guess if you're really concerned that people may steal them, and you're trying to protect the bones, then it's an honor for you to sit on them. There are people who are looking for bones and want to, embarrass Jewish bones so they know it's there. Okay, then if you have to sit on it, it's because you're afraid what's going to happen. But otherwise, you have to treat them with respect. That's what he says. At least if you're afraid of robbers or highwaymen, then it's allowed to sit on it. Okay, that's point one. Now, what about the whole idea of disinterring bones b'chlal? That's tesvav. Generally speaking, we don't transfer bones from one grave to another grave, even if you are giving the person a more honored spot. Let's say in one graveyard, there's different more honorable spots. You know, buried near the sewer is like not such a great spot. You know, and in the front, there's nicer spots. So, yes.
Or wasn't it the custom though, 1,000 years ago, to disinter the body with the bones in an ossuary?
An ossuary is a.
So it was a small box, and it was reburied, and usually in Israel. A lot of archaeologists are finding.
But that's where they put them to begin with.
No, they were disinterred because it's a small little box that only.
Who did disinterred it?
I guess relatives of the people.
Well, we'd have to see. Under certain circumstances, it could be done. Let's finish the halacha. We'll see how it will relate. Let's finish the halacha first, and then we'll see where we'll fit this in. Anyway, but generally speaking, you don't move it from one, because moving the bones is very difficult on the death of the dead. We know there's a famous medrash that when Shaul HaMelech was able to use magic and to bring Shmuel HaNavi back from the dead, he was extremely frightened, Shmuel HaMelech. Because he was afraid he was being brought to din again. So the same thing, when the soul sees that the bones are coming out of the grave and they're going somewhere else, then the soul thinks it's being rejudged. So it's not something that the soul is very happy with, seeing its bones moved around. It evokes all kinds of fearful scenarios. That's why, even though I want to get my dad a nicer spot, I didn't get a good spot in the old cemetery, I want a nice one, we don't do this. However, b'mahaya b'soch sadehu, but if the person was buried in a place that's not what we will call the family burial grounds, and then what do you want to do? Mefaneu. Now you can clear it and to put it in, let's say in those days, let's say your home, your farm, they put a family burial grounds over there. And let's say for whatever reason, a member of the family was buried outside of that for whatever reason. Now you want to take them out of a regular cemetery, so to speak, and now bring them into the family patriarchal cemetery, as it were, and that was a big thing in those days. So then you're allowed to move it, even if it's mechubad labazu, even though you had a more honorable spot outside, and you're getting a less honorable spot inside, this you're allowed to do, because it's very pleasant for the mace, for the dead one, to be, as it were, lying with his family. Okay? Now, here might be what you're referring to, where if, let's say you put a body, and when you put it originally, you did it knowing it was only temporary. And then you know, for whatever reason, this wasn't a spot, you know, let's say, person died on a battlefield, whatever, and okay, we'll just bury them for the time being, but we know one, when we're putting them in the ground, we don't plan on leaving them at all, then you're allowed to do that, A. B, if you want to move the person from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, that is your home. So that's allowed. So I don't know, maybe those, I'm not sure if the scenarios you're describing, Ken, may be those kinds of scenarios where they buried them to know to move them afterwards.
Well, even just the latter one, because I think, Ken, you're mentioning
about... Well, I don't know, where were they originally buried the first time?
Basically, from what I've seen, watched about these things, that they passed them 2,000 years ago or so, around the Second Temple period, or to disinter the bodies after the bones have been, you know, they're all...
But why did they do that?
To reinter them, usually they're finding these ossuaries in Jerusalem.
But where were they originally buried? That's
what I don't know.
No, okay. In the ground, decomposed, and after...
So why would they move them?
Take the bones and put them in a small...
why would they do that?
The same space.
I don't know. Maybe forward me a link or something. I'm not aware of it, so we'd have to figure out why they did that. We'll have to do further investigation on that. Okay, that's good. That's Tesvav. Okay, moving on. Tesain. Ein kovrim meis al gabei meis. You don't bury one dead person on top of another dead person. Velo shnei meisim ke'echad. And not two dead people together, I guess, right next to each other, like mamish next to each other. Should be zainu. Again, it's not honorable for that to happen, unless you have some kind of a wall in between. Okay, it doesn't have to be great distance, but if let's say one coffin, another one, let's say they're touching each other, but still there is a separation between them, that's okay. Now even one on top of the other, that's only if you don't have six tvachim in between. But if you have six tvachim, one on top of the other, that's also okay, because that's considered buried separately. So I think those, what do you call them, the catacombs? What do you call them? Not,
yeah, I think so.
That's what they're called? Where in the mountains... Right, so one would be on top of the other, but there would be a space in between them. Or let's say it was stone, then you have any amount in between is considered a separation, one between the other. In other words, the main point is it should be very distinguishable one from another. So in your dream with earth is soft, so you have to leave a larger space so they don't eventually crash into each other. If you're dealing with stone, then they're going to be separated no matter what. That's the main point over here. However, here's an interesting thing. V'katan ha-yoshen imimo. What if a young child who was so young it would be normal for him to sleep with his mother, and let's say they both died, chas v'shom, then nikvar imo could be buried together with each other, one right next, mamish, one on top of the other. That's what the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara says. A man can be buried with his little daughter, and a woman can be buried with her little son or her little grandson. And they say the rule is whoever they would, in their lifetime, they'd be sleeping together like that in an apparently affectionate way. We're not talking about anything, weird. Okay. Then, that's allowed to be buried that way. So you could see the great disgrace that Germans did to the Jews in Babi Yar and these kinds of places. They just take one mass grave and just shoot them and dump them all in there. I would not be surprised if the Germans understood that would be a, even after they killed them, that's another disrespectful way of just dumping one on top of the other. They have to have a little bit of "quote unquote" space for each other.
So,
okay.
So, husband and wife buried next to each other. What separates
the ground? They're in their own box.
You said the ground isn't.
Oh, no, that's ground. No, that's one on top of the other, okay. Side by side. First of all, the coffins.
Coffins themselves
separating them, and there's earth. It's not like a one big hole and you put one coffin in another.
Yeah, no, the tombstone looks like it's one.
The tombstone is together, right. But there's definitely a couple of inches.
So there's no halacha against side by side.
Side by side, what? But there has to be some type of separation.
Yeah, as long as it's that separation.
Let's say you got some earth. You got, or if it's just the wood.
Just the words of a coffin would be sufficient. Separation.
Yeah, that's what it's. As long as there's a dofen, it says a wall of the grave is separated.
Even though the wood's going to decompose.
Or maybe just the ground. the ground. You always have some space that's one between the other.
I just heard that some people purposely didn't go side by side.
There's not a problem. The coffins aren't side by side. It's only the stone. It's only the stone. You have a mutual stone. Right?
They call it like a double plot, right?
That's double plot, but the graves are separated from
it. Some people I've heard who just won't do a double plot. I thought there was some halakhic reason. I guess there isn't.
I don't know anything about that. Adarabha, husband and wife want to be next to each other. You know, I assume they got along, right?
Married, they don't want to commit to have to be buried.
In some cemeteries, the men's sections and women's sections are buried.
No, but usually they go. I mean, okay, those are really from. But I'm saying the regular ones, a husband and wife. Yeah, I don't know. This is already getting in the realm of minhag here, and this is not din now. There's some dinim. Dinim is you don't have a goy buried in the cemetery. That's like a real din. You don't have one body on top of another body. That's a real din.
That's for sure a reason to reinterment if you end up, God forbid, being buried in a church.
In a wrong place, for sure you got to go out of such a place. That's for sure. Okay.
And then the soul would like to be moved.
The souls are very much aware who their neighbors are, you should know. It's not a joke. And they definitely know who they're buried next to. And, you know, if you had a big tzaddik and you put a rusher right next to him, it would not be a very pleasant thing for the tzaddik's neshama to have one right next to him. So,
it's a good outreach.
What?
It's a good outreach.
All right, Yudzayim. Now, Afar HaKever, the sand of the grave, Eino Osir Bahano, is not Osir Bahano. Why? Even though we'll see, other things are osur bahana. We already said you can't do frivolous things in a cemetery. But the sand itself, you know, is not osur from anyone to have ana. Why she ain't karka olam neseris? Because the earth can never be made osur bahana, no matter what you do. And we learned this from Avodah Zarah. You know, let's say if non-Jews bow down to certain things, then we can't have anah from it. They bow down to an idol, you can't have anah from it. What if the idol worshippers bow down to a mountain? So you're going to say you can't put a house up on that mountain? In other words, the earth cannot be made idolatrous. It's Mother Earth, you know.
Even though a tree can.
Oh, so other things, yes, but we're talking about the earth per se. You can't make that into an avodah zarah because it's the earth. So the same thing, if a person's buried, they want to show respect, they don't take over the earth, as it were. The earth always stays something neutral, as it were. They could have an awe. However, avol kever habinyan, but what you build on top of that, the commentaries say you build a little house on top of it, over the grave, right? That's osur bahana. That's osur bahana because that's not the earth already. You make a little oihel, okay, a little house over it, above ground, so that was something that was separated and then connected, then that is prohibited to have personal ana. Obviously you could have the binyan there to daven in there, but to take the bricks out afterwards and go build another house with those bricks, that you could not do. Okay, we'll do one more. Yurches. Haboyne kever lemeis. If somebody builds, it's interesting what the word building a kever. I don't understand how you build it. You dig a kever. I don't know what he's saying. You're building it. Anyway, you build this grave for a dead person, but you designated it for someone, but you never put the dead person in yet. Until you put the dead person in, lo nesar atchi karnes b'ameis. You have not made that grave site prohibited for hana until the dead body goes in. Because we say hazmana, preparation, alone does not make it prohibited. You'd have to put the dead body in. It would be making use of the grave, per se. And then that grave becomes osur bahana. And it becomes osur once you put a body in it. Afilu hetel bo nefel, even if a young baby before 30 days was buried in it, it still makes that grave osur bahana, neser bahana, it becomes from that. All right, Rabbi Hanani ben. Okay, we're continuing now. We're in Halacha Yud Tes. Nefesh. Here the word nefesh means a monument. Nefesh shenasa l'shem chai. If a monument is made for a person who is alive, for when he will die. Okay, so it's not really like designated for this dead person yet. So, you know, it's just, so it's like very much advanced planning, as it were. Like it says, you know, when I die, this will be my headstone. This will be the thing that will demarcate where my spot is, et cetera, et cetera. So it wasn't really designated to the extent where the guy was dead, and now they've designated it as his thing because that's a little bit closer. And what did they do? They make a mistake for some bo hames, and they put another body in there instead. Vahosif bodimus. But they added another row of stones for the new guy that went in there. Achar l'shem hames, for the new guy who died. So afal pi shepina hames, even though you'll get rid of that dead body, because it wasn't supposed to be there. How you got rid of him is another issue. Probably have to find a patriarchal tomb or something, right? Hakol osrana, that whole monument is prohibited to take benefit from, because we added to it after the dead body was in there. Had we not added to it, then burying the wrong dead, the not designated dead person would not make that whole monument osrana yet. The imhikar esatosevas, if you can tell what was added on when you put the new fellow in there, then cholet, you get rid of those stones, cholzasov ashar mutu, then the rest of the monument is okay. Because all you had was a preparation of one who didn't even die yet. You don't have the dead body there. It was a different dead body. Now he's out, and whatever you made for him is not recognizable, so it's gone. So therefore, Chotzes of Ashar Mutar, Nasa, the West Mutar, because Nasa L'Shem Ames was made for the dead body, but it's not yet, he's not dead. So, but once Kaven Shudol Aves, but now that he dies, and then you put him in, then Nesar, then it's prohibited. Once you put him in, Afal Pishpino, even though you took him out afterwards, because there was preparation and an action, and even though you undid the action, but he was in the designated one he was supposed to be, and then it's forever prohibited. Okay, Chaf. Haboina Kevralavi. What if a person builds a grave for his father after the father dies? But what happened was, Vaholach Ukfaro Bekever Acher. But he ended up getting buried in another grave, but it was designated to be for his father's grave. No one else should ever be buried in the originally designated one for the father. Why? Because v'hakever hazeh, and this kever aser b'hanoa is prohibited hanoa mipnei kavod aviv, because of the honor for the father we have to give. Okay? So, interesting. Well, even though you designated, and usually that's nothing, but if you designated for a father, then that has significance.
It fills it back up?
I guess so. Yeah, that you do it. That's okay. You just can't have an off from it. Just fill it back up.
Eventually, he has to remember that was a spot. Like,
I don't know. I don't know.
What about if in a cemetery you purchase a plot, let's say beside your spouse, and something happened? And
this is only if the son designates it. Now, when you're buying cemetery plots, right, that's a whole different thing, because there could be all kinds of conditions. Then the cemetery sells it to you. They only sell it with certain conditions. They have rights to it, etc. I don't know. It could maybe be different variables here. But anyways, you're asking if you...
for some reason, the person's buried elsewhere.
Israel.
Right. So that particular spot that was designated for the person, can it be used for somebody else?
Well, that's a good question. That's a very good question. So,
well, the person, can they relinquish their...
Here it says just the son can't be buried.
Oh, yeah, that's
somebody
right.
else.
The son, that's so, right. That's the Torah says that. The Torah says that, not the Rambam. So you're right. It's the Shulchan Aruch argues on this Rambam and says the son can't be buried there, but others could.
Because it's disrespectful?
Right. The Rambam says nobody can be buried there. So according to Rambam, it would be a problem. But according to Shulchan Aruch, then that's not a problem. The dead body itself, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it. And we learned that from the Torah, where it talks about the death of Miriam. And it also says when you break the neck of a, the heifer that gets broken, right? It says that, in both places, says the word shum. So you make a hekesh. Just like the Egla Rufa, the whole area there is Osir Bahanor. So therefore we say the same thing by Miriam, that everything there is the dead body is Osir Bahanor.
What about organ donation?
Okay, so that's already, that's to save life. So that's already, that will supersede that. We're talking about just a regular hana to make a bar of soap. Or things like that. Or lampshades. Or whatever. Or to provide shade or whatever. You know, but we're now we're talking about saving life. We're saving life because nefesh is docha a lot of things. Right, so
that's why Rufo is not just the cap; it was the whole area, right?
Right, that area.
How was that compared to a person?
From the word shum, they say just like over there, it's us. No, the egla roof. No, the egla rufas, not the land. The egla rufas
also
by law.
Also, where I don't. I don't.
Maybe, but the main thing is the egla rufas. Okay. Just like the egla rufas also by law, so the dead bodies also by law. It's interesting. They bring the Yerushalmi. It says a dead goy is mutter bahano. Okay, and they bring all kinds of proofs in halacha from that. Let's say the Yerushalmi says it's mutter bahano. Blah 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 blah. Also from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it seems it's mutter bahano. But the Shulchan Aruch paskin said a goy is osur bahano. Okay, so we final hold is we can't have enough from a goy's body as well. All right, listen, it makes sense. You shouldn't derive benefit from a covered amaze, right? Bahano, cool, the whole thing, except chutz misaro, but the hair. You could cut the hair off the dead body. Why? Shumutar bahano, shumutar bahano, what would be the logical difference? You may say, ain't a goof, it's not really part of his body, right? Because think about it. Think about it. When a human being dies, what happens to the entire body? It starts to fall apart, right? Because there's no blood and oxygen, whatever. The hair, not for a long time. It doesn't die. Hair doesn't die per se. There's no death to the hair. The hair will be there for a while.
Wouldn't it be the same with teeth and bones, and maybe they don't die?
I don't know. Maybe I don't know, but he doesn't mention that. But he said, and it's also it's not really the body. It's something that's growing external from the body. Right, it's not really an internal organ. It's not part of the body per se. You could shave a person's hair off, and they're very capable of living a full life. I don't know. You want to say the nails? I don't know.
Couldn't we say that a person in their life cuts their hair off?
Okay, let's just say. Yeah, but the Gemara says because it doesn't change. Gemara says doesn't.
Disrespectful. You talked about how you respect for
those. I don't know, because it's not the body. That's the point, it's not the body. Ask Kojak. Go ask Kojak.
If you use the hair of a dead person for what? I mean, the Nazis use the hair of dead people.
Well, let's say you want to take the hair off of this dead person to use it for a wig for a woman who had chemotherapy.
I was just thinking.
I'm just giving him an example. Or for the dead person's child who needs a shaitel and can't afford one. I can give you examples. Okay, so it's that's what he's saying. The hair is not considered that kedusha, that body. A hair you don't live with it your whole life. It's not it's not an organ.
No,
it's an external.
It falls out on its own anyway.
You know, we certainly aren't going to want to do it to denigrate the person, But here, if it serves a useful purpose, it's not considered part of the body. It's not for any, you can use their clothes, you can take their clothes. Okay, no, it's not the same thing as clothes. But the halach is, it's not part of the body.
Can you take the shoes? I would have heard something about shoes.
I don't know any of that stuff. You know, maybe some mystical stuff. I don't know. Well, you'll see. Well, you know, we'll learn a couple of halachas later. Maybe it'll have some implication what we're saying here. B'chein Arona, also his casket that we're using him to bury him. You can't, take it out and then.
You can't buy a used one.
V'chol Tachrichav, and all the shrouds he's buried with. Asur Mano, you can't have anon from it. Avol Kelim Hamuchanu Tachrich, let's say you prepared Tachrichim, but you never yet used it for the mace. That's loss of anon, because you only prepared it. I feel Arik Begel Mace, even you made a garment for the dead person. And it's called, the late James's garment that we're going to put on. Making it for him, whatever. Still, it's not a problem. Lo Nesar, Achegia Bamita de Kiberis Bamo, until it reaches the coffin of which he is buried in. Okay, and now, and he's wearing it. Shein Hazmono says, just preparing is not enough. It would have to be dressed onto the dead body. Now, the next three halachas, Chafes Chavulgal, dealt with an interesting custom that they had. We don't do this, but it's an interesting custom. Kala Kalim should zorkin alames. it seems that the mourners, because they're in such great pain, they would throw things on top of the almita hanikberesimo. When they would bury the coffin, the relatives would throw some of their possessions onto the coffin and be buried together with that to express their grief.
Before the church.
Yeah, in other words, as they're lowering the body into the thing, I don't know what they take their jacket, throw it in on top of the coffin, and we'll go down with everything else. Okay? So that which they throw on it, it's Osir Bahana. Why? Interesting reason. Because if you're going to take it back, what might people start doing? We don't get too selective as to what we remove. Shalo Yischalfu B'Tachrichin. Because maybe they'll take off the shrouds as well. Right? So, that's why we prohibit everything there. Okay. Now, hoy chav gimel, hoy avi v'imo.
Can I just ask, what was their mindset? What did they believe?
I guess they felt very sad. They wanted to express that, just like we rip a garment. That's not so far away. We rip a garment when we make the bracha on the kriya. We're destroying something.
It's not like a pagan thought about it going with the dead person.
No, not going with. No, it's expressing your anguish. So just like we rip a garment, so that's another way of showing your anguish by throwing down. That's an expression of your grief. And psychologically, Chazal understood one is entitled to express his grief in a physical way. So, Hay Avim of Nisrakim Kalim Bachamosam Al Hameis. If it was for his father and mother, they can throw utensils in their anger over the dead person, okay, because they love them so much. There's a tremendous amount of pain on that, and they really want to make all their a lot of their wealth thrown out. So now the problem is we're afraid they're going to go overboard. You know, the kid's so upset. Here's my stocks and my bonds and my this, and here's $500,000 I'm throwing into the ground over there.
A check.
Guess what? Mitzvah lachem latzilim. Now it's a mitzvah for everybody to save it. Okay? And that's the greatest hashavas of it. In other words, you're gonna throw one jacket in, two jackets in. Okay, you wanna show your grief. You know, the guy throws a diamond ring in, he throws things worth, you know, real money here now. Then the idea is, you know, catch it. Don't let it go into the grave with them. That is, you're supposed to help them save money. But if once it touches the coffin and it's there, so we can't save it anymore, because again, we're afraid we'll switch it with the tachrichim and then take off the tachrichim. Chavdalit. Malamdim esa adam shalo yehe chablan. We teach people not to be destructive. Okay, now I don't know if he's speaking specifically now about the funeral anymore or just in general. Let's say a person, you know, you're upset, besides the other issues, you're upset and you want to break a dish. Yeah, I know it's a vozer, but you know, the guy wants to break things. I don't know if the conversation is relating to the funeral per se or just in general now. You know, don't be destructive of anything. And don't destroy utensils and throw them for destruction. Why? Because mutav lasitam laniyim. It's better to give it to poor people. Val yashlicham l'rim tola. Don't give it to the worms, right? V'chol amarba kelim alameis. And I think maybe it's either way. And anyone who excessively wastes utensils for the dead, like really throwing a lot, over below tashchis, they have transgressed the transgression of bal tashchis not to be destructive. There's a limit as how much you mourn, and you don't mourn that much more. Okay. Want to finish the parak, or we'll leave two for tomorrow? Another two. Okay. Be another 5 minutes. Chafei. Melech Shemes. If a king dies, now we all have to show a tremendous amount of mourning for him, and in all kinds of ways. First of all, the king would ride his special horse. You know, his kingly horse. Now, what's going on with that horse after he dies? Now, would it be honorable to the king who passed away to let somebody else ride that horse? No. So Okrin Sus Shoyrochalov, they would they pull out like the sinews by the hoofs to give it to, you know, not break the leg, but make it that it can't walk anymore. Or dislocate.
Is that cruelty to animals?
Animals don't feel the pain. There's no, they don't,
no,
they don't.
They can't walk anymore.
So they can't walk anymore. Finished. They're not gonna, they can't be, the main thing is they can't be ridden. The main thing, you do a way that nobody can ride them anymore. Okay.
You're not killing the animal.
You're not killing the animal.
It's like ripping a limb from a living animal.
You're not ripping it off. Ripping a limb from a living animal is only also if you eat it. Here we're injuring the animal to the point that he's not able to carry a rider.
He can still walk.
Yeah, he can still walk, and he'll go to stud, you know. And, you have old horses, right? So, you make it, you whatever, you surgically do it, that it's not able to, it can't bear weight of a rider on top of it. That's the main thing. And what about the calves that the wagons or the chariots would be led by that? And the king would sit in that. So what do you do then? And now share the same thing. You cut off certain parts of its hooves. Minar kuva. You disengage it from part of the knee, ulamatin below. Again, in a way, makom shein also says, not to make it a trefa. In other words, again, you injure it in a way that it won't be a trefa. That means it will die. But you make it in a way that it's not able to pull anymore. Because we don't want anybody else to use it. It would be disrespectful for the king. Remember, there's a purpose for this, Kenny. We don't stam do this. We have to show honor to the king. If somebody else will ride the horse, right? So we don't want to shoot the horse. But we just will disable the horse to the extent that they can't be ridden by anybody else. But there's a greater understanding. Human honor is much more important than a little pain for the horse. Moshivin yeshiva kiva shavim, and they put up a yeshiva over his grave for 7 days. His students engaged in learning Torah, even though we said before you can't learn Torah basic first because it's insulting there. But here where it's in honor of the dead person, for example, let's say Bnei Yeshiva for the Rebbe or things like that, it's permitted. Or let's say the Ramba means you're doing it 4 amos away. So then you're not right next to it. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, you see this when Chizkiyahu died. It says, V'kavod asalo b'moso, they did covet for him. And what the commentator explains, they put a yeshiva on top of his grave to give him honor.
What about for the kings that weren't good kings?
It was another story. They didn't put no yeshivas there. Still had to give him honor. The nasi shemes. What about a nasi? That's right, the exilarch, the biggest Talmud Chomer who dies. A mevatlan yeshivas yoshal shalom. Even though we close the yeshiva down, but not more than 30 days, so they should be engaged in mourning. Not more than Rabbeinu Hakadosh himself, that he commanded they should put a yeshiva on top of his grave after that. They should get back 30 days afterwards, because they ain't better than Moshe Rabbeinu. The Jewish people cried for Moshe for 30 days, and then it stopped. Last halacha chavav, melech o nasi shemes, if a king or a nasi dies, yeshlam lisrof es mitaso v'chol klei tashmisha, we burn his bed and any of the utensils he used on a regular basis, because again, we don't want others to use it, it will not be respectful for him. But this is not considered the ways of the Amorites, v'lo mishum hashchasa, and this is not considered bal tashkas, because here there's a purpose for it. It's not just to express my pain. It's to show the honor of the king. Just like, for example, the king's widow has to remain a widow her whole life. Nobody can marry the widow. It would be insulting to the king if somebody else marries the king's widow.
You don't have to break her legs, though.
You don't have to break her legs. Shenemar, as it says, Bisholom Tomus, Tzidkiyahu would die in peace, Uve Misrafos Avosecha, and together Harishonim Yisrafulach, and there will be burnings, just like there were burnings of your father, there will be burnings for you. Meaning to say they would burn some of the utensils that he used. And since it's in honor of the king, it's not considered bal tashkas. However, for people who are not that important, if you're going to go that far, that's already arrogance. Because, you know, in other words, if you're a regular guy, a little bit, but if you're really doing, you know, larger amounts of things that he used to destroy them, then it shows that you think you're like a king. It says when Rabbi Gamliel Azokain, when Rabbi Gamliel Azokain died, so Unculus burnt over 80 garments, and they said, "What's going on over here?" So he quoted the pasuk, and he says, "Listen, Rabbi Gamliel isn't any, you know, he's not better than 100 kings. So maybe overdid a little bit. So again, we have to limit. So when it's a king, okay, we show honor and we burn the things he used. But other people, You know, that's already saying you think it's like a king, so we have to limit that. Okay, we finished Hilchas Avel. So tomorrow, between Mincha and Marv, we'll just start Hilchas Malachim for a few minutes.
So schedule
we'll
tomorrow, Mincha, Rambam, Marv, tomorrow?
Yeah, Mincha, Rambam, Marv, and then Kol. And then next week, when we get 8:15, then we'll do Mincha, and then Kolol, and then Marv. Okay. What? Tomorrow night, learning will be at 8:45. First, tomorrow will be Mincha at 8:15, little Rambam, Marv, we'll start about 8:50, whatever. Rabbi Hanani ben Akash, Amr Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu Zakas, Ovi Vigir, Vatar Mishan Amr, Anach Vetzman, Sidko, Yagdol Torvi, Adir, Rabbi's Kaddish, on page 52.